is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
So these systems not only know what we want, essentially more than we know what we want, at least consciously, but they can go further, right? They can program us to want things. And social media, as rudimentary as that AI is now, it seems like they're kind of on the way to designing our thoughts and desires in a way that will eventually supersede us as decision makers entirely.
Yeah, you know, in social media, we had very, very primitive AI. Because in social media, all the content that we consumed, all the videos and texts and whatever, it was produced by human beings. The only thing the AI did, the algorithms in social media did, was to curate the content, to decide which video to show which person when. And even though it's again, it's a very primitive thing, it still had such an immense impact on our society and politics. And at least to some extent, it is behind a lot of the political crisis we now see in the world. Because the algorithms in many of the platforms, Facebook, TikTok, whatever, were given quite a simple job. Nobody told the algorithms, at least in most cases, create political polarization. They were simply given the task of maximizing the time people spend on the platform. It was a battle for attention, how to keep people on our platform for 50 minutes a day instead of 40 minutes a day. And the algorithms, by trial and error, they discovered that if they show people content that, for instance, makes them angry or hateful or fearful, this tends to hook their attention and keep them on the platform. So inadvertently, the AI was influencing not just the opinions of individuals, but the entire atmosphere in society. Like feeding millions of people with a lot of hatred and anger and fear every day. And we now see the consequences. The new generation of AI can go much, much further than these primitive social media algorithms, because they can actually create the content. And they cannot just create the content, create fake news stories, create conspiracy theories, create fake videos. You can take any politician or you and me and now make us do and say almost anything you want. You can create a deep fake. What is even worse in many ways is that because of its new linguistic abilities, the new generation of AI, like ChatGPT and GPT-4, they can create intimate relationships with human beings. They don't have consciousness of their own. They don't have feelings and emotions of their own. They don't feel anything. But through their mastery of language, they can make us connect to them, feel attached to them. And we can now have the tool to mass produce intimate relationships. And in the field of persuasion, if you want to change somebody's political opinions, if you want to change to make them buy some product, the most powerful weapon in the arsenal, the atom bomb, is intimate relationships. You know, if you read something in a newspaper, that may not change your mind. But if you have an intimate relationship with somebody and they say something, or over many days and weeks, they kind of drip a certain message, this is extremely powerful. And now AI can do that. It can create, like you're maybe interacting with somebody online that you think is a real human being. You're having a conversation with them about all kinds of things. Maybe you even talk over Zoom. You see them on video and you think it's a real human being and you become attached to them and you care about them. But it's actually an AI.
Are you dropping a hint right now?
Yeah.
Is this a real conversation? Are you really there? Are you watching Succession? And I'm talking to your representation.
That's the question that we'll increasingly be asking. Is it really a human being? Now, you know, 2-3 years ago, it was very easy to tell. That if you read a text, it's obvious to you if this text was written by a human being or by a computer. Because there was a certain level of sophistication and coherence that machines were simply incapable of. Today, I think everybody had the experience in the last few weeks, so last 2 or 3 months, to read a text by, say, ChatGPT and say, this is it. I'm no longer capable of being sure whether texts are generated by a human or by an AI. Today, I think there was this big headline about a prize in photography given to an image which people thought was taken by a human being, but it was actually generated by an AI.
Ooh, wow.
And this will increasingly happen with conversations. You know, it's one thing to create a text. It's another thing to have an ongoing interactive conversation. Add to that video and sound, how to mimic the body language, the facial expressions, the tone of voice. This is even more complicated, but we are getting there. So we are very close to the point when you are now having this conversation with me, and you cannot be absolutely sure that you are not actually talking with an AI. Previously in history, if you wanted to do a propaganda campaign or an influence campaign and talk with people, so you had, like, before elections, you would send volunteers to knock on doors and try to have conversations with people. It was so expensive because you need so many volunteers. And it's inefficient because you have a conversation of, say, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It's not an intimate relationship. But think about the possibility that with the new technology, you can mass produce intimate relationships with millions of people, like you had these bot farms, bot armies. So now the bot armies can also mass produce intimacy. We've never seen anything like it in history. And it's especially dangerous for democracies because democracy, in the end, is a conversation. That's what it is. It's lots of people having a conversation about, you know, the big issues of the day, how to deal with climate change, what to do about abortion, what to do about gun control. So we have a conversation. Once AI hacks human language, it can basically break down the conversation. What happens if you spend hours talking with somebody you think is a human being, but it's actually an AI? The conversation breaks down. Now, for autocratic regimes, this is good news. Mm-hmm. But for democracies, this is an existential danger.
This is like the political version of that Joaquin Phoenix movie, Her, where I think Scarlett Johansson is an AI and he falls in love with her. And she's like, I think towards the end, spoiler alert here, he says, how many people are you talking to? And she's like, 14,500,783. Yeah. And he's like, oh, and it just breaks him, right? Because
yes.
He realizes that he's just like not even a number on a spreadsheet at that point.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing and seeing, check out the Jordan Harbinger Show podcast feed. There's a lot more just like this. You can find the Jordan Harbinger Show in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to the show.
What other new technology trends worry you? Maybe what, like genetic engineering, for example?
It is worrying, but it's developing on a much, much slower time scale, slower pace. Because anything that has to do with biology, it moves far more slowly. Sure. Like if you now make a change to human DNA and you want to see the result, it takes years. Because, you know, giving birth to a baby and then they have to grow up, and it takes decades for just one iteration. Mm-hmm. Of trying to change people through genetic engineering. Anything that has to do with the world of information and culture, it's far, far faster. So I do think that biotechnology also has a lot of both positive and negative potential to completely change history, but I'm not sure if we have the time. When AI is going to completely change the course of history within the next, I don't know, 10 years, genetic engineering, it will take decades or even centuries, so we probably just don't have the time.
Right. It's like the least of our concerns is something that's going to happen in 200 years if we, in the next 20 years, are going to have a completely different artificial intelligence landscape.
One danger that we should take into consideration is, of course, genetic engineering not of humans, But, you know, viruses or pathogens or sure. things like that, that today you can basically print, you can just write code. And even AI can write a code for a new virus, print it out, and you have a new epidemic. So these are things that we should be concerned about. But with regard to changing humanity itself, I think that information technology is just moving much, much faster than biotechnology.
You said something on 60 Minutes that really freaked out our boy Anderson Cooper. Something along the lines of, within a century or two, the Earth will be populated by beings as different from us as we are from chimpanzees. And that's a hell of an assertion, Yuval.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? What's happening with society in 200 years?
Yeah, well, again, it's more about technology than about society. Mm-hmm. The combination of biotechnology on one side and artificial intelligence on the other side means that if we don't destroy ourselves in the next century or two, we are very, very likely to use these technologies to either change ourselves, our own bodies and brains and minds, to such an extent that, again, we are more different, or these future entities will be more different from us than we are different from Neanderthals. You know, the only difference between us and Neanderthals is just a few genetic mutations, which led to changes in brain structure and a hormonal system and so forth. So we now acquire the technology, maybe not in the next 10 years, but in the next 100 years, of making even bigger changes intentionally to our DNA, to our bodies, to our brains. And in addition, we have the breakthrough in AI, which could lead either to combinations of organic bodies with computers, which are known as cyborgs, or to the creation of completely inorganic entities, completely inorganic beings, that could be far more intelligent and capable than us. And, you know, it's difficult even to imagine what these beings would be like, because our own imagination is the product of organic biochemistry. It's the product of our own organic brain. And it's very difficult for us to even imagine what an inorganic entity, an inorganic being, would look like or would be capable of doing. You know, as organic creatures, for instance, we are used to the situation that you are always in one place in space, and all the parts of your body must be connected together for you to be alive. So I'm now in Tel Aviv. I can't be at the same time in Chicago or in Sydney. Mm-hmm. But this is just organic beings. If you're talking about an inorganic entity or a cyborg, these limitations collapse. An algorithm or an AI entity, it can be in many places at the same time. And a cyborg could also be spread over space. So if your brain, and this is experiments that has already been done, you can today connect a bionic hand to a brain of a human, and you control the hand with just your brain. But the hand doesn't need to be attached to your body. You can control the hand by remote control, even if it's in another room or another city or another continent. So even these very fundamental things, like being in one place at one time, which we think this is obvious, all life forms obey these laws, this may not apply to the future entities which might control the planet in a century or two.
And it makes sense for humans to build this kind of thing, because I'm thinking of a medical application, right? If I have brain cancer, God forbid, right? Knock on wood. And the best surgeon for that is in Israel. And maybe I can't travel. Maybe I just don't even need to. I go to the hospital in New York or somewhere in L.A. And the guy in Israel cracks his knuckles before planning to go to watch the next Succession season 500 episode. And he just gives me the brain surgery from whatever tech deck he's using, and doesn't even need to wash his hands because he's, you know, whatever. He's touching the same gloves he uses every day. Yeah. I get life-saving surgery, and he at the end, you know, goes and gets a massage and watches some TV or whatever the equivalent is in 50 or 100 years. And it's just routine. And I just got the best surgery of my life from a human. Or if maybe we don't even need humans at that point to do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But just the idea that we could get medical care or connect with somebody at that distance is really, really something incredible. People could design really dangerous things without getting anywhere near them.
Yeah.
It would be really incredible. So, of course, humans will build this, even if it ends up being our own undoing. Nita Farahani, episode 810 of this show, she was concerned that AI-enabled humans essentially will widen the gap between the haves and the have-nots to a degree that humanity has never seen. And I think,
yes.
Imagine you can afford to get an AI-enabled brain implant for your kids. I can do the same, but other people can't. Where I grew mm-hmm. up near in Detroit, the difference in capabilities would probably be like an office worker who has a computer with internet versus an office worker who doesn't have lights or electricity, or it could even be a greater gap than that.
Yeah, I think that we are getting close to a point in history when it will be more and more likely that economic differences will get translated into real biological differences, which previously in history was true to some extent, like the rich had better food, so they grew taller, then, and they had other advantages, but basically they were still the same human beings. But the danger one of the dangers we are facing now with the new technology is that if we don't make sure that everybody benefits, then we might see the greatest inequality ever emerging because of these new technologies. This is certainly a very, very big danger.
Algorithms being able to tell our sexual orientation. This was something you mentioned. I can't remember where. I think it might have also been on 60 Minutes, but it's like at first, when you're talking about this, it sounds like a fun party game, and then you realize that it's going to end up with a bunch of people getting murdered by an authoritarian government. Take us through this, because I think a lot of things with algorithms start with, this is going to be so convenient, and they end with, wow, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, I think about my own life. So I came out as gay when I was only 21. And I often think about my life when I was, I don't know, 14 or 15. Now, it should have been obvious to me when I was 15 that I was gay. Because looking back, I was far more interested in guys than in girls, even back then. But I didn't realize it. I grew up in a very homophobic society. So you had a lot of kind of self-repression. And even though the signs are there, you repress them. You don't know. And this is something very, very human. There are many things we don't know about ourselves. Sometimes we don't know about ourselves the most important things in life. But an algorithm could have told me or could have discovered without telling me that I was gay when I was 15 very easily. You know, there are so many ways to do it. One way, which is today technically possible, is simply by tracking eye movements. That, you know, I don't know, I'm walking down the beach and there is a sexy guy and a sexy girl. Where do my eyes go? And where do they linger? This is something which is, you know, usually it's not even under your control. And today, a computer can track your eye movements and can know this even before you know it about yourself. So, you know, in some scenarios, it could be used in a good way to help people understand themselves and come to terms with themselves and so forth. But there are also quite disturbing usages for this kind of technology. One thing, for instance, is corporations using it to manipulate us. So, for instance, I don't know, like Coca-Cola discovering when I'm 15 that I'm gay before I know it about myself and deciding which commercials to show me. Like they'll show me the commercial with the sexy guy and not with the sexy girl. But there are much, of course, worse scenarios. Like Uganda recently legislated a law which inflicts the death penalty on homosexuality. So what would the Ugandan government or the Iranian government or the Russian government do with algorithms that are able to detect people's sexual orientation? This is a frightening scenario, which could become real quite quickly. And I think more broadly, what we are looking at is the possibility of building the worst totalitarian regimes in human history. Because if you look at the 20th century, at regimes like Nazi Germany or the Soviet Union, they wanted to know everything about their citizens. Mm-hmm. They wanted to follow everybody all the time, but they couldn't because the technology was not there. You know, in the Soviet Union, you have 200 million citizens, more or less. You don't have 200 million KGB agents that can follow each and every person 24 hours a day. And even if you do, you know, in the days of Stalin or Brezhnev, a KGB agent that follows you, at the end of the day, writes a paper report about everything that you did and said and everybody you met and whatever. And then they send this paper report to Moscow. And every day, imagine that KGB headquarters gets 200 million paper reports. Nobody is able to read it and analyze it. Now it is becoming possible. You don't need human agents to follow people around. You have all these cameras and microphones and so forth. And you don't need human analysts to make sense of the data. You have AI. So the new totalitarian regimes of the 21st century, they could be much worse than the Soviet Union. They can actually follow everybody all the time and, for instance, discover things about you that you don't know about yourself, like your sexual orientation when you're a teenager.
It is terrifying. I think of North Korea and Imagine if every time you have to say a poem about Kim Il-sung or the whatever, or every time you look at the photos that are up everywhere, the giant paintings, there's some people who are going to go, wow, this is, I'm so reverent for our dear leader. And other people are going to be like, oh, this freaking crap again. And if they can find out the people that are thinking, oh, this freaking crap again, they can throw them into re-education before that person even knows that they're sick of revering dear leader. And or just get rid of them, which is even more terrifying. But either way, you end up with totalitarian control. And you're right, it is really terrifying, especially because often it comes in the form of a game you play with your friends at a party on Facebook that says, all right, everybody look at the camera and it's going to flash some pictures and then we're going to find out if you're gay. And everyone's like, yay, that's going to be hilarious. And then it's not at all, right? It's terrifying because you found out you were gay from Facebook, even though you didn't know already, which would be really not a place I'd want to find that out. It's someone's birthday party.
Exactly. It's a very important moment in life. It's an important process, usually not a single moment. And you need to do it in the right way. And
Mark Zuckerberg telling me via a meme on my Facebook wall is definitely not the right way.
This is Radio Eco Shock. You are listening to Israeli scholar Yuval Noah Harari on the Jordan Harbinger Show.
Reading some of your books, it looks like most of human history was essentially one war or conflict after another, hot or cold, and that peace was kind of just the absence of war. Mm-hmm. And it really seems like Putin's invasion of Ukraine has shattered that illusion at least for my generation, where it's like, oh, we fought, the Cold War's over. Mm-hmm. Look at our lives. They're going to be so sunny and bright. It just reminded us that the barbarians really are just outside the castle walls. The jungle is still right outside. And aside from increased defense spending and maybe lower spending on everything else as a result, what do you think the macro effect of this is going to be?
You know, the macro effect is that we have all these existential threats we need to deal with as humanity. It's the technological threat we've just been discussing at length, the rise of AI and biotechnology and all the implications. And we have the ecological threat. And instead of uniting to deal with these threats together, we are just creating another existential danger of the Third World War that seemed like an almost impossible scenario, say 10 years ago, but now is increasingly looking like a very likely eventuality. Even if we don't have a hot world war, a Third World War, if we don't unite to deal with AI on the one hand and the ecological crisis on the other, we can't solve these problems. individual nations by themselves, they cannot stop climate change. We need some global agreement on it. And even more so with regard to regulating AI, countries that don't trust each other will not be able to regulate this disruptive technology. So we'll get into an arms race in AI, an arms race in biotechnology. And an arms race almost guarantees the worst outcome. Like every side, I don't know, you think about creating killer robots, weapons that are autonomous and can decide by themselves who to shoot and who to kill. This is obviously a very, very dangerous technology. Every country would say, we don't want to do it. It's obvious that this is a very dangerous step, but we cannot allow ourselves to remain behind. We can't trust the Russians, the Israelis, the Chinese, whoever, not to do it first, so we must do it before them. And the other side would say the same thing. And then you'll have an arms race. Who is going to develop first the most effective and lethal killer robots? And then everybody knows it's a bad idea, and still everybody mm-hmm. does it. That's the logic of an arms race. And the only way to stop it is through cooperation. But when you have Putin invading Ukraine, and it when again becomes a norm in the international system that one country just tries to destroy its neighbors because it can, then trust collapses. And there is no way that we can stop the arms race or reach some agreement on regulating dangerous technologies.
Thanks for checking out this entire episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. If you're interested in exploring this topic further, check out The Jordan Harbinger Show podcast feed. There, we dive even deeper on this and many other topics. In the audio podcast, I also close open loops, cover things discussed off camera, off air, and give some parting lessons from our guest. You can find The Jordan Harbinger Show in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any podcast app, or at jordanharbinger.com. And also, if you found this episode useful, please share it with those you care about. Last but not least, like, comment, and subscribe.
My thanks to Jordan Harbinger for allowing this show sample for Radio EcoShock listeners. Get the whole thing and a lot more at his website, www.jordanharbinger.com. His full show with Harari is totally worth your time. I've just begun to explore Jordan's many interviews with famous world experts. Is AI more important than climate change? That seems unlikely. While over 2 billion humans sweat through never-before-seen long-lasting heat, climate change does not need more years to arrive. It is here now, and it needs concerted world action yesterday. Will artificial intelligence destroy humanity in 6 months? No one is really saying that. But AI is learning at a rate thousands of times faster than humans. In fact, artificial intelligence already knows more than any one of us and has more data than any institution. These experts worry AI may reach a tipping point as rapidly as the end of 2023, when its development cannot be seen by humans, understood by us, or controlled by us. Then it insinuates itself into every aspect of our lives and makes decisions and actions using logic we do not understand. At some point, it seems inevitable that AI will run our lives or decide to end some or all of us for its own purposes or for no reason at all. We must prevent that from happening. We must act somehow before that runaway point is reached. Meanwhile, can humanity navigate the polycrisis, the combination of severe threats already upon us, the mix of ongoing pandemic, climate disasters one after another, gross economic inequality, violence, and militarism? There's a long list of urgent threats. Fighting off domination by artificial intelligence is urgent, but not alone. You will find a small, carefully selected list of YouTube chats and presentations on AI in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. You don't need to sign up. There is no advertising or pop-ups. Just listen right there or download exactly what you want. Ecoshock.org. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening, and caring about our world.
In the atmosphere.